This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 6, Episode 41, Lessons from the Legends. This is the 333rd episode of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. So, we talk a little bit about Graham Gooch's 333, and we also mention a couple of high-profile retirements that have happened recently. Then we get into a bit more cricket coaching. We talk about how to bowl a bit faster as a spinner, and what to do if you're trying to move from tape ball cricket to cricket ball cricket. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are and no matter where you are. My name is David Hinchliffe, and joining me for the next half an hour or so to talk about cricket, coaching and playing, it's two cricket coaches with very fine reputations. The first is Mark Garraway, who is, of course, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. Hello, Garris.
Hello. How is everybody today?
Very well, thank you. And the second man, who is staying silent until prompted, which is extremely good radio technique, it's a cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Over to you, Lavis.
Hello there. Sorry, I can talk now.
Yeah. Excellent work.
Hello, Garris.
Hello, Sam.
So let's crack on with the show, because we've got a few things to talk about that might be quite interesting, and we might get a few stories from it. Of course, this is episode number 333 of the show. It's been through a couple of different iterations, but this is the 333rd version since it started. And that, of course, reminds me, and probably many others, of Graham Gooch's innings against India in 1990. Remember that one, Garris?
I do. I was on the Lord's Grand Staff, actually, so I had a pretty first-hand seat for that innings. And it was absolutely remarkable. He just kept churning out the runs. He accelerated slightly through his innings, but particularly took a liking to Ravi Shastri and Hirani, the bowler, leg spin bowler, at certain stages. But it was just a fantastic knock. And the great thing about it for me is that at the start of that year, he'd struggled against Terry Alderman in the previous year's Ashes, got out LBW hell of a lot to Terry Alderman. And the first ball of the whole summer that he faced was against New Zealand, Sir Richard Adley bowling, and he got out LBW again, first ball. So everybody was writing Gooch off as a spent force at international level. And then he came in and scored over 1,000 runs during the Test match series over the summer in England, which was just phenomenal, and obviously started with that 333. But he also followed it up with 100 in that game as well. So I got to see quite a lot of Graham Gooch batting in that match.
Yeah, it was great. I watched it on telly, and I think it was a moment for me that made me realise what cricket was to me as an important part of my life. And I still have great memories. You look at the photos and things, and it brings all the good memories flooding back of seeing that innings, and also the 100 he got in the second innings.
Yeah, the 100 in the second innings was fantastic, because they were really forcing the pace at that time and trying to give themselves enough time to bowl out India in the last innings. And you know, the 333 was brilliant innings in terms of its length and the way that he compiled it. He got dropped relatively early and then didn't give a chance after that. But the second innings, he was dominant, took all his form into it. I remember Robin Smith playing a great innings in that match as well. But one of my most endearing things, because obviously Gooch was captain of that game too, was the fact that the game was won with a direct hit run out from mid on by none other than G.A. Gooch as well. So he had a fairly strong influence on that particular match.
Yeah, he had a pretty good game. He did well there. Do you remember that one, Lavers?
I do, yeah. I don't remember it as well as Garris does, but I do remember being young, and that was one of my early memories of England cricket, really. And something that kind of sticks with you forever. One of the amazing things that I think about it, looking at some of the cricket you see these days, and especially following the recent cricket in the UAE, is just the pace of the game. That in a time when cricket wasn't necessarily meant to be a high tempo game. There were, I think there were 500 or 600 as well as the triple century in there, and it was still a result, which is a fantastic thing to see, because often you think with that many runs being scored, it's going to be a draw. But as Gareth said there, Gucci with a little run out and the game's done, and that's what Test cricket is all about, a stack load of runs, but still a balance that allows a result to be achieved.
It was also the game where Kapil Dev got India past the follow on by hitting 4 consecutive sixes off of Eddie Henning.
That's right.
You know, so it was a remarkable game from start to finish. Certainly, Gooch did some great things, and that was him dominating the game. But talking about Gooch, the best innings I ever saw him play was that when he carried his bat against the West Indies at Headingley for 158. You know, that was different dollars, because nobody else seemed to be able to get double figures yet. This bloke managed himself brilliant, managed the conditions and the situation brilliant. He was just an amazing, amazing player. And obviously you can hear all about that sort of stuff on Pitch Vision on his course.
Yeah, that's right. And that takes us nicely into the next topic, which is we've had a couple of retirements in recent days. Two very excellent Indian players, Virender Sehwag and Zaheer Khan. And speaking of batting and amazing innings, I do remember a Sehwag innings that was, it seemed anyway, equally amazing to that Gooch innings against West Indies. When they were playing, India were playing against Sri Lanka on a wet pitch, and Dravid Tendulkar and Ganguly got about 50 runs between them. But Sehwag scored 201 not out. And his approach, which is as it always was to just try and smash every single ball for 4.
Yeah, it certainly was. Crikey, and I saw enough of that over the years of sitting in the change room watching the boys getting flailed, particularly in India. You know, I don't think he ever quite came to terms with the lateral movement in this country, but certainly in his own patch, crikey, he was incredibly difficult to bowl at, because he used to stand and basically off stump was like a cut ball to him. You know, he used to stand on leg stump, and your conventional good ball was one that could go for 4, and it made bowlers have to adapt so significantly. Very offside dominant against quick bowlers. You know, I saw him take Steve Harmison to pieces in the Chennai test that Sachin ended up getting 100 to win the game in when we went back after the Mumbai attacks. But it was really Sehwag's innings which broke the back of chasing a massive score down the previous night, where he particularly took Harmy to the cleaners and was very, very difficult to bowl at. A top man, absolute legend of a bloke, I have to say. Always enjoyed his company. Somebody who wouldn't necessarily say that fielding was his forte or his biggest passion in life. But to watch him bat, whilst it was painful at times, was also exciting to watch somebody do things slightly differently, yet be absolutely brilliant, particularly in his own conditions.
I have another story about him as well, which was from Shane Warne's 100 Greatest Cricketers. And he said that he was playing in county cricket and had a particularly difficult spell when the ball started to reverse swing. So his idea to stop this being a problem was to hit the ball out of the ground, so they had to get a new ball.
What a fantastic solution if you're good enough. Can you imagine that? Yeah. Oh, this is a bit tricky. I think I'll just slog 100 metres into the stingers and we'll get a new ball. Absolutely brilliant. And no, he's a super player. And it'd be fascinating to see what he does now, because I can't even predict what Viru's going to do now. I've got no idea. It's going to be fascinating to see. But whatever it does, he'll do it with a bit of panache, won't he?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, he's kind of set a template that everybody follows now. Maybe not quite so mental either these days, but you know, it's now the way you play in one day cricket, isn't it? You just keep going for it. What about Zaheer Khan as well? He certainly had an impact on international cricket for India, didn't he?
He was fantastic, wasn't he? One of the things that I still think is amazing about Zaya Khan is, for a guy that continued to, I'm not sure how old he is now when he's finished, he must be 37, 38, Gareth will probably know, but he's definitely getting on in years, has shown that while the world is all about bowling 90 miles an hour plus, and it's all about being as fast as you possibly can, but a guy with skill is going to come out and be successful over and over again. And yes, he's bowled at pace in his day, but he's still been mighty effective in the last 3-4 years, and he's not been hitting 95 miles an hour anywhere near that. But the skill he's had has been phenomenal, and the control and probably the impact he's had on the other bowlers around him as they're growing up has been vital as well to India.
Yeah, a few years ago, he went to, do you remember this? He went to, he was injured and he was coming back from injury, and he went to France to go to see a personal trainer to help him get back to full fitness. I mean, that kind of shows someone's committed to do something there if they go halfway around the world to do something that they could have done in their local gym.
Yeah, I think it's been an area that he's always struggled with a little bit. And I've seen Zaire in Mumbai a lot at the Cricket Club of India in the coffee shop in between series. And, you know, he gets himself fit generally by bowling. And then got to a stage of his life where that wasn't necessarily going to be working for him, and sought the best advice that he could possibly get, and extended his career as a result. But as Sam said, you know, his skills were amazing. And the thing that I admired most about him was that he would bowl when the ball wasn't doing anything, and he would just slow his pace down. He'd bowl wicket to wicket and he'd work on the ball, and then he'd get the ball to start to tail or start to reverse, and then all of a sudden his bowling speed would go up by 8-9 miles an hour, and the thing started to go sideways at 84-85 miles an hour, whereas it'd been operating in the mid 75s with maybe Dhoni standing up and bowling around the wicket cutters whilst he was getting that ball into a decent nick. A very clever bowler. He was somebody who, without being absolutely express, could run through a middle order and a lower order in a blink of an eye, because his skills were so significant. And he was an incredible competitor as well, was always up for a scrap, you know, really helped to take Indian cricket, particularly in the test match game, and then obviously into that World Cup they won in 2011. It took them to a new level, and they wouldn't have been able to do it without people like him.
Well, good luck to both of those guys. Hopefully they'll move into their post-playing careers nicely. Let's finish this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that you want to say. I've got the questions, so let's get going. First question. Bowling inconsistent length is the hardest technical problem for cricketers.
No.
No.
Second question. Before you can do great things, you must expect them.
No.
No.
Third question. Nothing is more exciting than a moment of sudden discovery or invention.
Yes.
No.
Okay, it's time for the mailbag. And we have a couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to this show, or perhaps readers to the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com. And we do our best to answer those questions, and then we decide on a winner of the prize, the best question of the week, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll give you some more details on how to get in touch at the end of the show. And Fraser sent in a question, and he says, I'm currently completing my ECB Level 2 coaching course and coaching in Scotland and listening every week. I am 23 years old and currently trying to break into our first team, but still regarded as too slow and loopy a bowler. Although I can use this to pick up wickets at the tail, I would like to be able to attack higher order batsmen. Can you give me any advice on how to generate more speed without losing flight or accuracy? Should I be looking at arm speed, strength and conditioning work, or is there another avenue to explore? I know spinning the ball is still the key, but I would like to have a good variation of pace to use as a weapon too.
Brilliant question, Fraser. Thanks very much for the detail. And I think you've linked it in with a couple of things in there that could help. One of the things that I think, I always go back to the starting point, I suppose, the root causes. I'd be interested to have a look at your run-up pace at the moment. And often the slow and loopier bowlers don't have a great deal of momentum going into their bound and then into their delivery stride and into their release. And as a result of that, they have to create quite a lot of that at the crease, which can often negate spin because they end up propelling the ball rather than trying to get the ball to spin in the air. So that would be my first point. And obviously, you know, as we say every week when it comes to bowling actions in particular, it would be great to see what you're doing. But that's normally a good starting point to have a look and maybe experiment with running in slightly quicker. I don't mean like a seamer, but just increasing a bit of momentum, because you will take that momentum into your bowling action, and then you won't have to use your bowling action to propel the ball. You'll, you know, and get the ball down the other end at a faster pace, because obviously then you're likely to lose your spin, but also, as you quite rightly said, flight and potentially accuracy. So that would be my starting point. Then I'd probably look at the way that the front side of a body works, because often when people bowl with an excessive loop or they're bowling quite slowly, it's because they're trying to bowl the ball with one side of their body. So in your case, being an off spinner, I would suggest looking at your left side to see what that front arm is doing, see if you can make that more efficient, and seeing if that can contribute to the overall action that you're putting on the ball, rather than necessarily just being there as a bit of window shopping, as I call it. So those would be my two starting points. The front arm is likely to then have a positive impact upon the speed of your bowling arm, which is something that you've already recognised. And yes, the strength and conditioning work can have an impact, but I would go back more fundamentally before necessarily focusing on anything strength and conditioning wise. I'm sure you're doing that as a general thing anyway, your strength and conditioning, but I'd look at run-up pace, and I'd look at what the front side is doing to contribute to the overall action.
From a strength and conditioning point of view, Lavers, is there anything that can help with improving bowling speed in a kind of more direct way than just doing general sort of strength and power exercises?
I actually wasn't going to consider strength and conditioning at all, because I would agree with Gareth in this case and say that this is going to be a more fundamental technical issue, where whether it is, I've actually got... the two things I've written down were approach speed and rotation. So I'm not answering your question at the moment, David, I know.
Okay, you answer the question, and I'll stop asking side questions.
but we'll come back to your question in a second. But I agree with Gareth, and I'd put down rotation as well as run-up speed, which is effectively what Gareth is probably going to allude to when he's talking about front arm usage and bowling with your body and using your both arms and your body as well as just your bowling arm. So I'd be exploring down the same routes as Gareth, really. So it's going to be something fairly simple. We don't need to get too technical, as Gareth has said already, that if you do want to explore strength and conditioning, then there are additions you can make, but there's going to be much more simpler ways to add pace at the moment as a spin bowler. So yeah, that I'm not going to give a great more than Gareth has offered there, because it's always nice to have a pick out something small and something that someone might not have thought of. But I think it's going to be quite simple, really, in answering your question.
One thing that worked very effectively with a spinner that I was working with recently was getting a more of a braced front leg. He had been working on getting his front leg better aligned, you know, so he wasn't crossing over, so he had room to get his hip through, and we experimented with him bracing his front leg a little bit more like a fast bowler, still not getting into that exact same position, but a little bit lower down in that position that you imagine when the front foot lands with a braced front leg. And he immediately got his speed up from the mid 30s to the low 40s without doing anything except that one little bit of experimentation to change. So maybe that's something to try as well.
Yeah, I think some basic drills, like just some simple stationary drills to try and generate a little bit of torque. So practicing generating that little bit of extra speed from a stationary position so that when you do add in your either your orthodox run up or a slightly quicker run up, then you're going to add more pace as well. So working from that stationary position teaches your body to try and generate the pace that it needs to with its movements, so with its rotation, with its direction of your movement, etc. So I would suggest there'd be a good drill to go into as well, and obviously that works hand in hand with what you're suggesting there for the alignment of feet and bracing that front leg, because you can place your legs exactly where you want to, and you can get everything exactly positioned how you like.
When we're talking about speed as well, one thing that Stephen Jones advocates is heavy ball bowling. Gareth, what do you think about heavy ball bowling in the context of a spinner trying to improve speed?
Yeah, I don't see anything that stops us from doing that, and I know Steph produces his own different grades of heavy ball, and then going into lighter ball as well, and the same principles apply. So yeah, I'm keen on that. We get our spin bowlers doing that as part of their program. It wouldn't be an incredibly significant part of the program, but they've definitely been doing it. I wouldn't be able to prove or disprove whether it has an effect, a positive effect, but the kids love doing it, there seems to be some benefits that are coming from it, but I couldn't show you that in a scientific fashion. But the principles the same apply, isn't it? It's about, kinetic chain. It's about transferring energy and momentum up through that, and in the case of a spinner, applying that into the fingers and the wrist in some cases. To put revolutions on top of the ball, and as well as propelling it down the other end. So it's a very similar process, and I think the great thing about all of this stuff that we talk about nowadays is that there are some real crossovers between fast bowling and what we're looking for in there, and also spin bowling. Obviously, some subtle differences, but a lot of consistencies that go through there. We talk about front legs, we talk about kinetic chain. It's the same principles, and the more understanding we have of that, the better we can coach.
Okay, hopefully you got some ideas there, Fraser. Next question's from Jubair, and he says, I can bowl fast with a tape tennis ball, but I haven't tried a cricket ball yet. Can I have some tips about cricket ball bowling fast like a taped tennis ball? So I guess we haven't got a lot of experience with this, but it's a very common thing that happens in India and the subcontinent.
Yeah, well, obviously with a tape tennis ball, there's the movement that you can often get through the air, and you get this skiddy effect with that ball, which is what allows it to travel so fast, and the extra weight of the tape gets it really moving. But one thing you learn, I think, and I've played a little bit of cricket with a tape tennis ball over the years when I was a bit younger, and one of the things you learn quite quickly, which is really interesting as a bowler, is you kind of learn to manage the ball a bit. And that's something that will transfer into your use of a cricket ball when you do that. The way in which you manage that cricket ball is going to be slightly different, but I'm sure everyone's had a go with a taped tennis ball. Have you had a go with a taped one, David?
I never have actually.
Well, you can imagine if you're playing cricket with a taped tennis ball, as soon as you bowl that ball and Garraway puts you out the park three or four times, little bits of tape are peeling off and it's starting to disintegrate a bit, and so you've got to try and manage it. But you're also not just trying to save it, you're trying to use it to your advantage and trying to get it to swing. So I would say that you can use your experience of managing that type of ball and transfer that into a cricket ball, and think not only about how you can bowl fast with it, but also how you can be skillful with it, and you can maximize the movement you can get either through the air or off the pitch. Now, with a tape tennis ball, you're unlikely to have a lot of experience of using the seam, so that's something that's going to be new to you. So think how you can utilise that in a match situation, and how different conditions are going to be relevant to using the seam differently. So obviously there's use of the seam when it comes to actually trying to swing the ball. So how you position the ball, and that's going to be one thing you'll have to learn early on, is your grip with a cricket ball and how that suits your action for you to swing the ball. So there's going to be an element of experimenting early on there. And once you've done that, it's then going to be looking at different ways you can use the seam, or different ways you can manage the shiny side and the rough side to try and keep that ball moving, or keep that variation through the air as the ball progresses and gets gradually older and older. So first port of call would be line the seam up and work out how you can actually swing it, given your action. And then after that, think about how you can continue to be a threat throughout an innings rather than just with a new ball when it's swinging around. And they're all end of options. And as someone we spoke about earlier, which was Zaya Khan, it had all manner of ways of making a ball move, whether it was through the air off the pitch. But that's the challenge that lies ahead of you. Good luck with that, sir, because it's going to be something that's difficult but rewarding if you can get it right.
I guess the first tip is get hold of a cricket ball, isn't it, Gareth? Give it a go.
It is, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a brand spanking one. Get hold of one, give it a go. But I think the key thing for you is going to be the difference of a ball feeling in the hand. And Sam's talked about it around the seam and trying to transfer some of those skills that you've learned in managing a tape ball to get better results and take that into managing a cricket ball and doing it. But it's often the weight that is different. And therefore, you're going to have different sensations and different feelings going through the body. Often your bowling action will remain fairly consistent, yet for the first bit of time, whilst you're making the transition from tape ball to cricket ball, you're going to be getting different sensations. Your bowling arm will be travelling at a slightly different pace. Anybody that's gone from cricket ball to tape ball and back again will know that they might get that tingling sensation going in the wrist and in the fingers when they start bowling with different weights of balls. And it's something that I get always if I've had a break from throwing with a sidearm, for example, and then I come back into it and you get that ulnar nerve which runs down the arm, starts to tingle a bit as you have different weights of balls being projected out of your hand. So you'll get a little bit of that, but over time you'll start to work out where your release points are, and you'll start to work out how everything works in terms of timings between lower half of the body and upper half of the body. And eventually there'll be very little difference between your action and the sensations that you feel between your tape ball bowling and also your cricket ball bowling. Now, going back to Stephen Jones, you've got to mention in the previous question, obviously the tape ball acts as that underweight ball once you get used to bowling with a cricket ball, and that can be fantastic for developing speed in the arm. Getting people to bowl with an underweight ball, everything feels like it's going faster because it is, because it's not having to shift quite so much weight. And then you go back to the bowling with a normal cricket ball and there should be some transition back into pace. So what I would say is use your tape ball as your underweight ball, use the cricket ball as your normal weight ball, and then maybe find a cricket ball that is slightly heavier or put things on it to make it heavier, and that can be your overweight training ball, and then you can alternate between those and get the real benefit that Steph talks about on his course and in his literature, which can really help to generate even more pace and power from a bowling action. So it's about the transitions through different weights and then using those to your advantage to get a better result.
And enjoy it, because it's a new challenge. It's going to be slightly different, but you get stuck into it and get on with it, as you say, Gareth.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
And follow loads of people that have gone down the tape ball route into cricket ball route and had amazing success. You know, virtually, well, we talked about Zaya Khan. There's no way in the world that he didn't start off by playing with a tape ball. That would have been his foundation. And then you look at the Malingas, virtually all of the Pakistani and Indian and Sri Lankan players have grown up on a staple diet of it and made that transition into cricket ball really well.
It's soapbox time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and that is 1 minute of time allocated to one of the members of the team who can't be interrupted during that minute. And this week, it's Sam Lavery. Lavis, over to you.
Yeah, so recently, or probably going back a couple of months now, I talked about being careful with the language you use when you talk to players and parents and different coaches alike. But the other thing I want to be wary of is the content of what you say and how little things can often hold a lot of weight with different cricketers, depending on who you're speaking to and the environment you're in. And recently we've had a number of cricketers who've picked up on comments and they've taken them quite literally, and it's ended up being a big part of their focus. And subsequently along the line, it's turned out that what was actually said was a bit of a throwaway comment by a coach, or just a little bit of a word of advice when walking out the door, which wasn't actually that important. So what I want to be aware of is as a coach, make sure that everything you say has a meaning, everything is directed towards what you want someone to achieve, and you don't let little comments slip in, which could be misread or could be taken the wrong way, and subsequently send people off in the wrong direction.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Before we go, we do have to do one more thing, which is to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Fraser's question about bowling a bit faster as a spinner. And we had Jabai's question about making the transition from tennis to cricket ball. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I really like Fraser's question this week. I thought it gave us good detail. It's fantastic to hear that you're doing your coaching courses as well as trying to break into the first team. I think hopefully the coaching course will have a good impact upon you as a cricketer, and that will help you in your quest to get into that first team. So Fraser wins it this week.
Congratulations, Fraser. And if someone was listening in to the show and they thought they wanted their question answered, and perhaps have the chance of winning the prize of the online coaching course, how could they get in touch with us, Gareth?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us a line on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media is also around. Twitter is at pitchvisionacad and Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, then pick your favourite podcast app. Do a search for Pitch Vision in there and you will find us. Click the subscribe button or tap the subscribe button and you'll get the show every single week. If you want more details from show notes, we want to get old shows, or listen to the show on the web, then you can do all that through the Pitch Vision website. So if you go over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link there, you get all the previous shows, all the other 332, including this 333rd one. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Derek Kenway on drums.